Ninja Bihari.
Jai Ram.
Jaiya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jagmuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaiya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaiya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimad His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki. Garantarashiman Bhagavadanki, Nitai Gaura Premanandi. O glories to the assembled devotees. O glories to the assembled devotees. O glories to the assembled devotees. O glories to Shishiguru and Shigouranga.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Withdraw of the Cosmic Creation, Chapter 19. Lord Vamanadev begs charity from Bali Maharaj. Text number 18. Okay, taste number 17. What happened? Oh, that's it. Okay. Anyway, it was supposed to be an spontaneous class, anyway. Text number 17.
Naniyate kamaye rajam. Badanyach jagat ishwarat naidnat pratnoti bat vidyam javat artha pati prati graha nanyate kamaye rajam badanyach ba वदान्यच जागत ईश्वरात् नैन प्राप्नोति वैभिद्यम् जवत् अर्थ प्रतिग्रह नान्यत्ते कामजे राजम् वदान्यच जगत ईश्वरात् नैन प्राप्नोति वैभिद्यम् यवत् अर्थ प्रतिग्रह Not anything else. Te, from you. Kamaye, I beg. Rajam, O King. Badanyat, who are so munificent. Jagat Ishwarat, who are the King of the entire universe. Na, not. Enaha, distress. Prapnoti, gets. Vai, indeed. Vidvam, one who is learned. Yavat artha, as much as one needs. Pratigraha, taking charity from others. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O King, controller of the entire universe, although you are very munificent and are able to give me as much land as I want, I do not want anything from you that is unnecessary. If a learned Brahmana takes charity from others only according to his needs, he does not become entangled in sinful activities. Purport.
A brahmana or sannyasi is qualified to ask charity from others. But if he takes more than necessary, he is punishable. No one can use more of the Supreme Lord's property than necessary. Lord Vamanadev indirectly indicated to Bali Maharaj that he was occupying more land than he needed. In the material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. One acquires money extravagantly and also spends it extravagantly. Such activities are sinful. All property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all living beings who are sons of the Supreme Lord have the right to use the Supreme Father property, but one cannot take more than necessary. This principle should especially be followed by brahmanas and sannyasis who live at the cost of others. Thus, Vamanadev was the ideal beggar, for he asked only 3 paces of land. Of course, there is a difference between the footsteps and his footsteps and those of an ordinary human being. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable progress, can occupy the entire universe, including the upper, lower, and middle planetary system, by the unlimited measurement of his footsteps. Nanyate kamaye rajam badanyach jagat ishwarat naina prapnoti bai vidvam javat artha pratigraha. O King, controller of the entire universe, although you are very munificent and able to give me as much land as I want, I do not want anything from you that is unnecessary. If a learned brahmana takes charity from others only according to his needs, he does not become entangled in sinful activities. Om ajnana timirandasya jananjana shalakaya chakshur ummilitam yena tasmai sri gurube namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satanine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. First of all, I was looking forward to hear His Holiness Ramapad Swami this morning too. but his throat is still not good and he wanted to save his voice. So you have to bear with me. Obviously, I didn't prepare. Actually, I came a little late because I was trying to read the verse 18. So I have a little tiny preparation for verse 18. So we do this one. Pray to Kishore Kishori, Srila Prabhupada, my Guru Maharaj, to be able to say something. The principle, here's a very powerful phrase. All distresses in the world, in the material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. It's very powerful. It's very deep to actually, understand this sutra. But it highlights a very important principle. And Prabhupada brings it up in his purport, that we learn this principle in the Sri Upanishad. Immediately that comes to mind when we hear about this, no? The Ishavasya principle. We know that's the first mantra of the Sri Upanishad. Ishavasyam idam sarvam jatkincha jagatyam jagat. That everything in this world basically belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the supreme controller and the owner of everything.
And one has to send, one has to accept, there's a quota for every living entity in this world that is provided by the Lord. And when one understands that principle, then actually one is qualified for liberation. So that is a principle that when one is able to live according to that principle very happily, one is actually situated in transcendence within this material world, which is something quite significant, because the Lord designs this material world basically to fulfill the desire of the living entity to be away from Him. But He designs in such a way that it's a place for reforming that type of mentality. So, first of all, it's a place in which there is no sustainable happiness. So it's described as a place of miseries, dukkhalajan ashashvatam. And it's ruled by this powerful force that spoils every attempt that the living entity have to happiness, which is eternal time. Eternal time frames everything in such a way that it destroys any attempt that we, you know, may pursue for having success and happiness and be settled. Because the nature of the living entity is like that. The nature of the living entity is eternally happy, eternally bliss, eternally blissful. And if it's not in that situation, the living entity is constantly frustrated and constantly hankering for that. So that's the quest of every single living entity. So eternal time basically is the difference between the spiritual world and the material world. It's what makes the material world, basically. And it spoils all those attempts and makes everything miserable. And on the top of that, there is the three modes of natures and all these different arrangements that basically spoils any type of attempt that we have in this world to actually be happy. So that's there. But then He also designs a system. It's a perfect system that is for the living entity to be able to have all the things that is required to be happy. So within the frame of eternal time that makes everything temporary, you can achieve some satisfaction of the senses. You can be happy. But that happiness also comes together with knowledge of transcendence. And with that knowledge of transcendence, your consciousness also becomes elevated. So not only you're able to satisfy your senses, but also you qualify, or your consciousness becomes reformed. That original desire that brought you to the material world becomes reformed by the process of transcendental knowledge and by this particular element that the Lord includes in this perfect system that is called Yajna, or sacrifice. We know in the third chapter that Krishna says to Arjuna that in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all the creation created this system that included man and demigods. And he blessed them by saying that be thou happy by this sacrifice of Jagya, because by the performance of this Jagya, you can obtain everything desirable in this world and live happily. And at the same time, at the end of this world, at the end of this life, go back home, back to Godhead. So, the process of Jagya is this very important element. So there's, in other words, there is this perfect system that Krishna provides. It's confirmed. There is this perfect system. The introduction mantra of the Sri Upanishad tells that the Lord is complete. And everything that he does is perfect and complete. And then it comes to say then about the Sri Upanishad elaborates in this how human beings have to live their life according to this perfectly complete system that is provided by the perfect complete personality. And we have to embrace that that system. If we have the intelligence and the fortune to be able to learn that system and apply it in our life, then that's the only shot we have in this world to be happy. So if we're going to take it from that perspective, then here's the answer. This is the answer for the world to actually be able to learn to achieve some sustainable happiness from in this life and also have an elevated consciousness that will guarantee harmony and peace in the world. That will actually bring unity in the world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that the unity can only be achieved by Krishna consciousness. So there is no chance of unity among individuals, communities, countries without Krishna consciousness. So the attempts, Prabhupada often mocks the attempts of the United Nations to bring unity among nations, that is an impossibility. They've been trying and trying and trying, and it's just a mock. Sometimes Prabhupada describes as a bunch of dogs barking at each other. And similarly, with individuals also, even among families, it's difficult to achieve this unity. Sometimes we discuss, you know, it's something like when we hear Srila Prabhupada Swami offering to Srila Prabhupada, he wrote about this point of unity and diversity, which is something that as an institution, a society, as a follower of Srila Prabhupada, we are, as members of this institution, it's very important for us to fully understand. Among the great diversity that is there in our society, in our Krishna conscious society, ISKCON society, then what will bring unity? Because sometimes there is conflict among some groups of devotees and things like that. Even within an ashram, sometimes we may have some conflicts. So what is this principle? It's the principle of Krishna consciousness. We actually have to become Krishna consciousness. Because if there is conflict, basically means that we're lacking maturity in the principles of Krishna consciousness. So we have to raise ourselves. And here's the principle of Ishavashya Idan Sarvam. That we rule under, we all embrace in the same system, and we accept and very happily what Krishna is providing for us. Whatever quota is providing for us. We actually learn to depend on Krishna and accepting one's quota and be satisfied with that and be engaged in the yajna or the sacrifice that is prescribed for us. And in this Kali Yuga, we know what is the prescribed yajna, which is the chanting of the holy names, Sankirtan yajna. Jayanti hi sumedasa. What is it? Sankirtana prayar. Krishna varnan tusha krishnan. Sangopangastra parthanam. No, there's one word. Say it again. Jagyai sankirtana prayar jayanti hi sumedasa. That the yajna of Sankirtan. The Sankirtan yajna is the prescribed yajna for this age of Kali. So, the performance, accepting happily what is provided for us. The performance of Sankirtan yajna and the cultivation of transcendental knowledge. These are the elements that are necessary for human beings. It's the same thing that Krishna provides for Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. We don't understand. This is just in this mantra of the Ishupanishad. Basically, is the whole theme of the Bhagavad Gita is contained. The whole approach that Krishna has to Arjuna is contained. Because Krishna tells Arjuna that, first of all, when he says that, now listen for me, that I'm going to tell you a process. This is in the second chapter, I believe is 240. I'm going to tell you a process that if you actually learn it very nicely, you can obtain peace, happiness, and elevate yourself, you know, to Krishna consciousness, to perfection. And then he started to say this process of Niskam Karma Yoga, that working Karma Yoga works in Krishna consciousness. Basically, he guides Arjuna how to work in the world, to be part of this world. And then do it in such a way that the results of that work are an offering of devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he tells Arjuna that if you're able to learn these signs, then you can be peaceful and you can be happy and you can elevate your consciousness. And he goes to explain, Arjuna was confused, you know, at the end of the chapter, because it's difficult to put the two together, being part of this world and being spiritual and elevate your consciousness, because you have to, because work and being, doing things in this world, karma, in general, the result of karma is that you get entangled in actions and reactions. And then spiritual life means, you know, you elevate your consciousness, you start to detach yourself from this world and connect to the world of transcendence. So Arjuna was confused. So Krishna, please explain. You're telling me, you know, that one have to use one buddhi, intelligence, to apply it in Krishna consciousness. And after you telling me that one have to be engaged in transcendence, you say that I should fight. So these two things I don't understand. So Krishna goes on to explain in the third chapter the process of karma yoga. And at the end of the third chapter, he says that in order to the element that allows karma and yoga to be together is transcendental knowledge. So you must acquire transcendental knowledge. And then the fourth chapter is transcendental knowledge. What is transcendental knowledge and how can we acquire? So he explained that almost the essence of transcendental knowledge is to fully understand Krishna in tattva, in truth. To understand that the divinity of Krishna's activities and Krishna's appearance in this world, purpose, Krishna's essence, to understand that tattva means the essence, the truth, to understand Krishna in that way. Jamma karma chame divyan evan yo veti tattvataha. And how we obtain this transcendental knowledge that will allow us to, once we get it, you know, tyakta deham punarjaman, that no more birth in this world, then we have to obtain it from a spiritual master. One has to approach a tattva darshi, a devotee of the Lord who's actually taking that have seen the truth, has seen that truth, understand that truth. And that spiritual master have to be within the disciplic succession. Evam parampara tan iman raja shilopithu. When approach that vidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya, one approaches a spiritual master and one receives transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge becomes extremely important to receive. Because by transcendental knowledge, we can actually elevate our consciousness and understand this principle of Isavasya principle. That, yes, same thing that Krishna tells Arjuna, that the verse that guarantees peace. We learned that in the fifth chapter, Bhaktaram Jagyatapasam verse. That same thing, Bhaktaram Jagyatapasam is the same thing that Ishavashyam Idan Sarvam. Bhaktaram Jagyatapasam, that the Lord, the Supreme Lord, is the enjoyer of all sacrifices, of all tapasya, of all austerities, all works. He is the enjoyer. It must be for his satisfaction. Everything should be done for his satisfaction. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, he is the owner of everything. He is the Lord of all the planets. Sruhidam Sarvabhutanam, he is our greatest well-wisher. And just by understanding those things, then one can obtain peace in this world. One can live peacefully and happy. And Krishna says, what is the question of happiness if you're not peaceful? There cannot be happiness if you're not peaceful. If you're anxious, then forget about it. It's just a mock. You can't be happy. So, so this principle we have to embrace. We have to cultivate transcendental knowledge. In the Isha Upanishad, he goes into a very fascinating discussion on vidya and avidya, transcendental knowledge and nations. And in separate verses is described that that what is nations? Me looking here, actually, it's going to put in Spanish. Okay. Yeah, mantra 9. Those who engage in the culture of nations, of nation activities, shall enter into the darkness regions of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So, what is the culture of nations? The culture of nations is based on the premise that life is meant for sense gratification. That the purpose of life is sense gratification. The goal of life is sense gratification. And it's rooted in this misconception of the self as I am the body. And the purpose of life is sense gratification. So, you know, the pursuance of all works for satisfying the senses just create this culture of nations. And that's what Prabhupada said, this phrase of that's what creates this extravagance. Because the senses are insatiable. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's like pouring, to try to satisfy the senses. The senses are like a fire, and the senses are asking for fuel. And if you put fuel in the fire becomes even bigger. And then it requires more fuel. So it's a never-ending, you know, cycle of wanting and desires. They never become satiated. They never become satisfied. So, so that's nations. And then worse than in the Ishupanishad says that worse than that are those who are in the so-called culture of knowledge, which means that you are representing the culture of knowledge, you know, transcendental knowledge. You are in the position of a brahmana, of a sannyasi, and you're actually trying to satisfy your senses. They're worse. That's what Prabhupada mentions also in the purport. He says that brahmanas and sannyasis who engage in this business of extravagance, of taking more than necessary, becomes sinful. It's actually a grace. It becomes very sinful. Yes. This principle should especially be followed by brahmanas and sannyasis who live at the cost of others. He says somewhere here that such activities are sinful. You know. So they actually, like in the Ishupanishad, they become the worse than the regular materialistic people that are engaged in the culture of nations. Then in Mantra 10, then Krishna says the wise have explained that one result is derived from culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Mantra 11, only one who learned the process of nations and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So that's that same principle that is described in this be thou happy by this sacrifice, that, you know, living in this world happy and at the same time with an elevated consciousness, that The cultivation of vidya and avidya side by side, transcendental knowledge and your duties in this world, your activities in this world, understand how to be part of this world. Side by side with transcendental knowledge, that if we have that full understanding, if we're able to do that, side by side, we can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality, basically go back home, back to Godhead. We are, that will be a position of transcendence. That's what Krishna told Arjuna to come. That's the science that Krishna wanted Arjuna to understand. And that's what Arjuna understood at the end of the Gita. And that's the message that is given for us to understand. That Krishna tells Arjuna in the 6th chapter that renouncing the world is bona fide, but not for you. Why? Because as long as you have some, any speck of desires, this process of Nishkam Karma Yoga, devotional service, is the one that is for you. And this is the Ishupanishad also, that one comes to live in this world guided by transcendence. So our material tendencies, our material nature, this body comes with certain is wired in certain way according to the material modes of nature, and so we learn to use this body, we learn to use our nature, we learn to use what we do in this world as an asset for the purpose of transcendence. So our material propensities becomes an asset for achieving the purpose of life, which is self-realization. So that's when you have these two things together. And I think this is what I can say about this. I didn't prepare very much, and I can open for discussions and then maybe we can churn this a little bit. Yes. Giridhari Prabhu. Every time I say Giridhari Prabhu, I'm gonna remember Govinda Hari.
What does it mean to learn the culture of nations?
Well, we have to understand our nature. We have to understand the gift that Krishna gave us, with this body. We have to understand how to use our body in the service of Krishna. We also have to understand the material facilities that Krishna gave us. We're dealing with matter. We're surrounded by it. So we have to have an understanding of the thing. Therefore, one of the things Prabhupada explains in the purpose, I can remember the verse, that the spiritual master gives us as our swadharma. Amen? And there is two types of swadharma. Swadharma means our particular, our own, it's specific to us. individual. And the two types of Swadharma is your according to the Varna or your nature, your material nature, and then he gave you your spiritual, you know, he put you in an ashram for cultivating transcendental knowledge. So therefore, this system of Varna and ashram is there. They're together. And they, you know, they go side by side. So you've been trained, you know, according to your nature, but you're also being given transcendental knowledge. And through our life, you know, we go through that, those two together. And we pass through different stages, you know. So it's important for us to understand our nature. And the spiritual master helps us with that. It's all guided. You have any talk on that? Or anyone wants to add to that? Yes. Yeah, can you pass the microphone to... hold on, Sri Vrindavan.
An oxymoron, it seems, because nations actually means...
Bring the volume a little down.
It might seem like an oxymoron because nations actually means ignorance.
Yeah.
So you're saying our no knowledge, so culture of no knowledge, that's what nations would be.
Right.
So maybe when he's asking what is culture of nations, so in my understanding I would say when we are not engaged in, you know, inquiring and understanding what the goal of life is, and we are in material knowledge, we are actually doing so much. We are really accumulating so much knowledge. There are millions and millions of books, and the webs. Our web is full of all the knowledge, but it is not real knowledge, and that's why it is nations. Because even though we are acquiring so much knowledge, it is not really answering and taking us to the goal of our life. So that's what the culture of nations would be. We spend lifetimes in finding out about, can we go to the moon? Now can we go to the Mars? Can we inhabit Mars? Can we inhabit Pluto? Can we inhabit, you know, Venus? And spending so much energy and time, and in essence we are wasting. And that's what culture of nations would be. We are actually going more and more deeper and deeper down into the well of ignorance.
Yeah, the Ishupanishad is very interesting because it describes nations, this avidya, in different levels. That when avidya is together with vidya, that verse 11 or mantra 11, it describes more the understanding of one's, you know, nature like that. So it's more like you use one's nature for the purpose of self-realization. You use material, whatever material knowledge or material asset you have is used for the purpose of self-realization. And then in mantra 9, avidya is describing the use of material, your material nature, your material assets for the purpose of sense gratification. So it was important to have our, you know, Srila Prabhupada's purpose to be able to really understand, you know, these different conceptions of avidya. So avidya together with vidya is Nishkam Karma Yoga, basically. It's the devotional service that is described in the Bhagavad Gita. When they're together, when they're separated, forget about it. Then, you know, without transcendental knowledge, you're going to hell. There's no chance of happiness. There's no chance of peace. It's like also Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, all the efforts, whatever the works, the sacrifices, the culture of knowledge, is all wasted. It all goes to hell. They have no result. So without transcendental knowledge. So it's very fascinating to really try to understand. You know, these books are amazing, especially the Bhakti Shastri books. It's so relevant for society. So it's almost like, you know, like often just sharing, you know, thinking. Srila Goswami once, one of the visions that he had for this temple is that this temple becomes a center of education. And so we're thinking deeply about this, to trying to, how to, you know, assisting his vision. He's guiding us like that. And there's no chance for the world if they don't receive brahminical, you know, transcendent education and transcendental knowledge. And it's almost, and we have to, you know, renunciation, because people have this idea that, you know, coming to the temple and being a devotee or being trained as a devotee or having to live in a temple like that means that we reject the world. It's renouncing, renunciation. But that doesn't work for us. That's what, you know, Krishna's, the whole thing of the Bhagavad Gita. Because as long as we have desires, there's no chance for renunciation. We'll be pretenders. So in reality, we're preparing people to live in the material world. The education that we're going to provide here is what is going to give people the chance to live in the material world and have a chance to be happy and to elevate their consciousness, to be peaceful. So this is what we like to provide here. This is what we want to become. We want to become a place in which we can actually add transcendental knowledge to avidya. So then it becomes, you know, something that elevates people. And, you know, so what do we teach here? We teach the Bhakti Shastras. We teach how to worship the deities. We teach how to live in the mortal goodness. How to embrace a life of, you know, transcendence like that. So I think it's a very exciting, you know, vision to be part of. And we feel very lucky for that. Anything else? Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Today we were discussing about Nishkama Karma Yoga, right?
What?
Nishkama Karma Yoga. Can you also explain about Sakama Karma Yoga?
Sakama?
What
Sakama
is the
Karma
difference?
Yoga?
Yeah, what is the difference between these two?
Yeah. In the beginning, that Krishna says, you know, that there's four types of people that comes. So in the beginning, we have some desire to fulfill. We want to be happy. We want to, you know, these we have desires. We have, so that's the first step in which we're engaged in devotional service. And as we become purified, then those things start to become clear. The example that we have in the scriptures that are classical is Dhruva Maharaj. And we just read about Aditi, that you approach a spiritual master, you know, and you with sincerity, and but you have desires, so you approach for the fulfillments of your desires. So Dhruva Maharaj, he had a desire, he wanted a kingdom greater than anything in this world. And so he approached Narada Muni for how to get to that. And with when the spiritual master give your Swadharma, then if you have the proper mood, in the case of Dhruva, the principle that the main ingredient that he had was gratitude. I mean, he has many things on his side that were very determined, but gratitude was what allowed him to take up the practices and at the same time have a very grateful heart towards the spiritual master. And then in very short time, he elevated himself by following exactly the instruction of his spiritual master, and he is able to achieve Krishna consciousness to the point that when he was face to face with the Lord, he could understand perfectly that, you know, he was asking for pieces of glass and he have received this wonderful jewel. So he didn't care anymore for those desires, so now is Nishkam, no desires. And in the case of Aditi, she approached her spiritual master, Kashyapa Muni, and with the request that please do something to bring my sons back to their, you know, heavenly kingdom. And she was distressed because of that. But with a similar mood of devotion, and she approached her spiritual master, she was given a process, and a yagya, a vrata. She followed that, you know, perfectly, and she achieved, you know, the darshan of the Lord, and she also discovered at the end that, you know, she was free from that. So we come, that's a natural progression. But, you know, and the Lord makes provisions for that. Well, that's why we get, you know, we're able to fulfill our desires. You know, so he's very kind. What Kashyapa Muni told Aditi, oh, poor lady, you have, you know, these material desires, he was sort of like saying, just see, you know, what attachments does, you know, basically. And then, but if you want to be happy, if you want to fulfill your desires, this is how you do it. It's the only chance. You worship the personality of Godhead. Otherwise, no chance of happiness. One can fulfill one's desires in other ways, but one finds out that as you fulfill it, then now they want more. So it's a never-ending task. So you're always hankering. You never become, okay, now I'm satisfied. Is that right? Okay. Anything else? Yes, Ishan Prabhu.
As you are mentioning the Swadharmas, that the spiritual master helps guide one in their Swadharmas, I was wondering how specific one should expect that guidance in terms of how one understands one's nature and how one should be optimally engaged.
Yeah. Pariprasnena sevaya. One have to apply those principles. That's the relationship with the one Guru Maharaj is based on those principles. Pariprasnena sevaya. Inquiry, submission, and service. So one have to ask. One have to. It's part of the relationship. One inquire submissively, and one render service. So it's part of our duty to actually, you know, take instruction. But we have to ask. So we ask our Guru Maharaj in times. You know, there's so many facilities for inquiring. So you just write or ask personally when you have the chance. And then when one receives instruction, is apply it, follow it. And the following have to be with gratitude. The element of gratitude of how the kindness of the spiritual master. So ask. All right? Okay. One more question if there is there, or then we can close here. Okay. Prabhu, then Krishna Archana, you also have something? Okay, and then there's Karunani Prabhu and then Krishna Archana.
Are you somebody there?
Yes.
I want to just add to that Mataji's question that there is a nice verse or that akama sarva kama va mukhya kama udharati tibrena bhakti jogena yajate purusam param. That is whether you whatever whether you want something, don't want something, akama without any desire or sakama with a desire. So everything will be fulfilled if you worship the Lord's lotus feet. So then tibrena bhakti jana. That is very nice word. We have to be firm faith in Krishna with determination.
Tibrena bhakti.
And it will be all your desire will fulfill in due course of time.
Krishna Archana.
Thank you.
I was understanding from the explanation that you were giving that 11th mantra from Shishupanishad was giving a particular definition of nations, and that definition was actually taken into account the psychophysical nature of a particular person. So the psychophysical nature of a particular person may not even be accessible to the person unless there is the input, so to speak, coming from the spiritual master. So, would it be correct to understand that the even very strong desires that one may be conscious of, even in that nation state, that it's only that kind of molding from the instruction coming from the spiritual master that allows it to connect with the transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, one would be at the mercy of that particular desire.
Correct. Oh. Yeah. When one is guided by transcendence, by transcendental knowledge, then it becomes an asset. But otherwise, if it's not controlled by transcendental knowledge, it just takes you down. It's vicious. You have no chance. So one is pulled by one's nature. And engages in all kinds of extravagance. Basically, is I want more, So transcendental knowledge regulates and sort of guides that propensity for performing devotional service. So is transcendental knowledge makes everything leads everything to the purpose of life, which is self-realization. So everything gets directed towards that. Is that right? Thank you so much, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam ki jai.